You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans, and welcome to a Victory Monday edition of Bison Report Radio, brought to you by Gateway Chevrolet Cadillac, and joining me live on a Monday for maybe even the first time this season that we're getting it out to you this hot, this fresh, Mr. Zach Willis. Zach, buddy, how are you?
I'm great. Is there anything better than a playoff Victory Monday and get some sweet loving going? I'm ready to chop it up about some Bison football.
You talk about hashtag no free ads. The only thing better might be Taco Revolution.
Oh, my goodness.
Little insider trading secret, folks. In the same building as the Bison Report Studios, there is a kind of made-to-order Mexican joint, sort of like in an alley. And when I say sort of in an alley, I mean in an alley.
Yeah.
And that is authentic, and it is.
There's going to be a lot of heavy breathing on this episode, more than usual.
The boys had some lunch and chopped it up a little bit before this episode. But obviously a tremendous time to be here in the studio after a victory of that manner. And a little bit of news as you're getting this today. By the way, folks, 60% off at Bison Report for VIPs. Very important to note that we have sort of a transfer portal palooza going on at BR. So if you've ever been kind of interested in our VIP stuff, it is 60% off of an annual subscription. I would say certainly worth it, and it's absolutely without question the number one way to support us. But with everything going on kind of in the portal all crazy, the entire network's on 60% just because it's an opportunity and people want to know what's going on with the portal as the portal has opened up today.
Yeah, that's necessary because I feel like that gif from Always Sunny where he has like the red lines all over the place of who's going where and what coaches are following what player and who's in, who's not, so... And, have it all in one spot.
Right, and I might even, I think I'm going to work on, not to out anybody or anything, but I might work on a little bit of a VIP board post where you just have to sort of, maybe not a full story, but just where if you're in the know, you're in the know, just kind of outlining what we've been hearing as far as offers and some of the efforts being, we're going to get into some of the efforts, but some of the efforts being maintained to retain kids that was not possible a year ago.
Yeah.
And just sort of, some of the under the table things that are allowed to go on. And look, we get it. I mean, that's business. That's how things are done right now. And the NCAA, one thing I will say, they just don't seem to care about that aspect. Like, I have seen no transfer portal tampering punishments that I'm even aware of.
No, and it's because it's so rampant, and they've just kind of set the precedent that they're not going to do anything about it. So, like, well, shoot, let me slide in these DMs quick.
And to me, it's funny because if I'm North Dakota State, and of course, I think you'd probably have to have the player's consent. And maybe I'm also thinking too fondly, or maybe unrealistically, about NDSU. But in my brain, NDSU is probably not doing a ton of tampering. I don't feel like, right? So if you're the Bison and you're not really out in players that are under scholarships, if you're not in their DMs, like if you're not in the two best player at Minnesota State, Mankato, shout to B-Tom, shout to Buto. But if you're not like in their DMs trying to will guys to your thing, why not just put all these cheaters on blast? Because that's right. Like, I get why and I'm not trying to cast aspersions here, but I get why like Minnesota doesn't do it, right? Because like Fleck has complained a ton about his guys being tampered with.
Right.
You know his bald head is in those DMs trying to find guys from Central Michigan, Iowa State.
It's all done through Twitter.
Right.
It's not hiding at all.
Right.
Like if I see – follow Farrell Portal. I think his name's Mike Farrell.
Yeah.
Does all the portal updates. If somebody tweets out that they have an offer, you can go and look at their follower list and see who's been messing with them since they were got to that school 5 weeks ago.
Okay. Anyway, so no news yet is good news outside of Peter Anderson.
Yeah.
Just a quarterback that was very clear that like the path to actually playing here was not probably great.
Yeah.
And you know, we know, well, we'll get into that a little bit.
I think guys like Peter are the reason why the portal is a good thing, where, like, you know, he can go somewhere where he might have an opportunity to play right away, where, you know, before, in my era, back in my day, he was sitting out for a year if he went somewhere else.
Shout out, Trev.
Shout out, Trevor. Old head.
Your boy got his first start yesterday.
Big time.
And that had to be pretty darn cool for you.
Absolutely.
Mr. Nash Jensen.
Yeah.
72 snaps at right guard. And a little unfamiliar spot for him. You know, obviously the one I always get with is Josh Sitton from the Packers. It's like wiping your you-know-what with the other hand.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit different. And you can kind of see some of that in and also, I mean, all credit to Nash. He's an undrafted rookie.
Right.
Like, there's going to be
in his first career start.
Yeah. There's going to be some bumps in the road, but good to see him get through there healthy. And I think, if nothing else, the Panthers are going to take a good long look at what they have there. See if they want to, you know, upgrade or if Nash might be, you know, potential guy for them. So incredibly excited, for Nash. And then, I got to tell you, at about 10 PM last night, I was incredibly excited.
Any reason in particular?
Well, anytime that your boys Green Bay, oh, there he is right there. You see him on the wall?
Yeah.
Anytime that your boys Green Bay Packers get a dub.
You said that like you walked in the room.
Anytime your Green Bay Packers get a dub over the defending world champions and our guy, C-Dub, gets two tugs, it's a good day.
And it wasn't the, like, Christian running by people touchdowns either.
No.
It was like, I'm going to go make a play.
Yep. Just ran away from Trent McDuffie, who's one of the probably the best 5 or 10 corners in the league.
Yep.
Probably the best nickel corner. And then just mossed somebody in the back of the end zone, got the toe tap down, and left the game. The Packers called a hell of a little jet sweep thing trying to milk the clock. You know, they're going downhill, 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 trying to get, you know, to the point where the Chiefs wouldn't possess the ball again, and LaFleur threw in a little pop pass to Christian, grabs his hammy, has the presence of mind to stay in bounds, which awarded, you know, valuable seconds to the Packers, but missed the first three games of the season with the hammy. We're thinking and hoping that, you know, good things out of that. Maybe you miss a week, but if it's another four, it's not good.
Right, yeah, and hamstrings are so weird, too, because they linger for so long where he could feel fine to go next week.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's one wrong step and it's like, hey, I need to shut this thing down. So hopefully it's not as bad as it was going into this year and he can just kind of.
Yeah. Cause you could see him. He's just trying to get to speed. They fooled the end, which is what you're trying to do on a jet sweep like that. You're trying to catch the end crashing down, but there was a safety who read the play right. And Watson had to beat him to the corner, which was no problem because that's Christian.
Yeah.
But when I think he kind of put the throttle down is when, you know, we had an issue there. So hopeful for Christian's hamstring for a number of reasons beyond just me being a Packers fan. Like, it's just fun to watch him work.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's one that I'm not paying enough attention to. I've got a lot of stuff going on, as I mentioned. Packers game yesterday. Two kids under three. I got all the excuses you could ever want. So one thing I'm not paying a ton of attention to is this USD ticket situation. I'm going to put my hand up. We've got family friends coming in. I've got another obligation next Sunday. I'm not going to goodness gracious, there's a Freudian slip. I'm not going to Verm.
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm going to watch a game on TV. I'm not going to Verm. So I wouldn't need a ticket anyway, but I just have not been, like, my brain has not been on whatever this controversy is. So can you kind of clue people in on what's going on?
Yeah, so Apparently, USC is kind of notorious for doing this, too.
Probably to the rabbits, I would guess. Sure.
It has happened on multiple occasions of them trying to cook the books. And I'll detail this after I describe what happens. But,
sure.
So they put out a presale for, like, their exclusive alum. Like, they call it the Howling Pack or whatever.
Okay.
That's their crew of people who have first access to tickets and season ticket holders.
Okay.
With a password to get out and have access to the tickets. Ross, the password was playoffs. Now, we talked about it before. The Bison fans.
What if the password was password?
I know. Yeah, it might as well have been. Bison fans are notorious for, like.
Sure.
They're going to find a way to get your tickets.
Yeah.
And they did. USD administration was not happy about this. And
sure.
Apparently, they're going through right now as we speak and canceling people's purchase tickets, which is now canceling USD fans' tickets as well because they can't discern who is who and who bought what tickets. So it is an absolute gong show. And apparently, part of the reason is that when they cancel all these things, they still count those tickets as sold so they can call it a sellout. Because they sold whatever 18,000 tickets total, but people went and bought. There's only 12,000 people in the stadium. They'll call it a sellout.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So you can try all you want to keep the Bison out of your building, but they're going to find a way. And I hope because that place isn't like hard to play or intimidating to play in, but it's hard to like make your own juice and get fired up. So we might as well just make it a home game on the road. I'm fine with that.
Yes. 100% agree. And it's good to see, you know, we talked, right? It's good to see when you look at the crowd at Drake, and I would guess that that's probably the smallest home crowd in a million years, the folks that showed up for the Drake game. And, yeah. And I get it, man. Thanksgiving weekend, 66-3, non-scholarship team coming in. Yeah. Bison fans are used to losing three regular season games either way. Like, I get it all. I understand all the excuses. I understand all of it, right? But to then see, like, a mobilized force of Bison fans trying to take over someone else's building, it's like, that's the stuff.
Yeah.
That's the stuff right there. Love that. You know, get rid of the kind of the apathy. And I think, man, if there's any result to get rid of the apathy, it is what happened down there in Montana State. And it's almost like, it's just like, when was the last time a second round game made you feel alive? That was just incredible. Okay. Did you have any more on that aspect of it?
I just
the ticket of it all. You said you had
no. Okay. It was just the clown show of now you're canceling alums tickets who have to rebuy. And I know I've talked to a couple Bison fans now through Twitter DMs. They're buying backup tickets to their backup tickets. So maybe we'll just go in and hoard it and have 15,000 Bison fans in there, which would be equally funny after USC makes this effort to keep us out of the building.
Yeah. Okay. So now diving into, and Mike McFeely did, I was aware of this deal, and I'll just be blunt, and this is no disrespect to Mike. Mike did a good job. This has nothing to do with that. I had a thing. I had sort of gotten wind or been invited to did we circle the wagons? It sort of seems like, to be honest with you. As has been reported, as I sort of, you know, poked my head out on Twitter and said, like, I knew of two, and there are at least three six-figure offers out to NDSU football players right now, which, of course, is illegal because the portal just opened today.
Yeah.
But there's three six-figure under-the-table offers out there to NDSU football players to leave and to go play football somewhere else. I think it's pretty obvious right now that one of them is Cole Wisniewski. I know one of them is Gray Zabel. I don't know the third one, and frankly, it doesn't much matter.
Right.
But these young men have been offered a significant amount of money, and that's the world of college football that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, the Green and the Gold Collective is doing an excellent job. And you know, we kind of talked, or you talked about, okay, like, what is being done? We understand that there was this press conference, and, you know, we had Jay in here. Jay is the founder and the CEO of the Green and the Gold Collective, and he kind of answered some questions that you and Quinn posed on the Benchwarmers.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we're necessarily seeing, but right now 130 athletes are a part of the collective.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing, and we're not going to get cash details. We're not going to get numbers on this stuff. I don't want numbers
yeah,
on this stuff.
We don't need that stuff.
But you're seeing at least to this point that Gray is still a Bison.
Mm-hmm.
Cole is still a Bison. Logan Kopp is still a Bison. Eli Green is still a Bison. Both quarterbacks are still Bison.
Yep.
And last year that was not the case.
Yeah.
And last year was different circumstances, certainly, but last year that was not the case. You're seeing the effect of the Bison at least having a fight. Now, if Alabama comes in like they did for Grant Nelson and says, we got $600,000, would you like to come play right tackle Gray's Able?
Right. What are we going to say?
Yeah. I don't know what, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if it's Virginia and right. it's $100,000, at least there's a conversation with some business leaders here in Fargo or using some collective funds or whatever
mm-hmm.
to at least be like, hey, you know, would you take half to stay?
Right.
You know, like that kind of conversation where before it was like, well, we developed you and we're going to win and we can maybe send you to the NIL and, you know, maybe we'll get you a mattress commercial. Like
right.
it just wasn't the same. And I'm being mean to the comfort king. I always am, but you know what I'm saying is there's at least like a conversation to be had, right?
Yeah, it's the, and I don't like knowing all of these guys on the team, they would never go and like shop around for the biggest offer.
Yeah.
But what are you supposed to do when there's any money being offered to no money being offered?
Right.
And now we have the facilities to do that. Even yeah. this meeting that came out happened at Herdenhorn's yesterday.
Yeah.
Was just like, hey, we need to rally the troops because we need to support these guys right now. That infrastructure is there, and that's yes. very encouraging to see.
Yeah, and I'll just say this. They're on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. They have a website, easily Googleable,
yep.
The Green and the Gold Collective. The Green and the Gold. You can find it on our Twitter. I think I linked to it directly from there. Folks, if you're thinking about your giving, and if we're reaching you, and if you're listening to this, you know, we get anywhere between 300 and 1,000 listeners per show, and we love every single one of you. If you are with the means and you are someone that gives to North Dakota State Athletics, I need you to understand, and I'm not trying to be a cheerleader here, but I just need you to understand the landscape of college football.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Is it important that you give to athletics things like the indoor practice facility? Yes, they are. They're very important. You know, people are. I would encourage you all to vote yes on the Fargo Dome measure. I think that's yeah. very important. Those types of facility things are important. Salaries, being able to pay your head coaches, being able to retain a guy like Dave Richmond, being able to retain a guy like Jory Collins, and for them to pay their staffs, mm-hmm. that's very important. Is team acres important? Is it important to fully fund cost of attendance and fully fund each scholarship for each team? 100%.
Yeah.
I would almost say you need to start looking at NIL giving as like a third.
Yeah.
As an equal part of, or if you have a passion about the players and you want to see them get more, there's going to be plenty of people whose tradition it is to just give to team acres and give to the school.
Yeah.
That's what people have been doing for 100 years.
Right.
So if you think like, and they're going to just kill me at the school for saying this, but if there's one or two offshooting folks that do want to give a bigger gift to NIL than they do to the school or to the team acres, you're not going to be that disruptive because they're still Lang's still doing a great job.
Yeah.
The fundraising people on the strictly athletic side, Matt mm-hmm. Larson, his folks are still doing a great job. They still have an awesome relationship with big, big companies like Nodak Insurance and Gate City yeah. Bank and all that stuff. Like, they're going to be fine. What's not fine right now, or what is at least in its infancy, is the NIL Collective. And that is a direct way to take care of these guys. And frankly, folks, if you don't want the Grant Nelson thing to happen, I'm not dumping on Grant.
Yeah.
But if you don't want a kid from Devil's Lake, North Dakota, to show up on your campus and prove for 3 years that he is an NBA talent and then just boogie on out of here to Alabama.
There's one way to do it.
There's one way to do it, yeah. and that is the NIL Collective. And that is, I guess, the end of my rant.
Yeah, and, you know, that's kind of been a weird, like, stepping on each other's toe thing for a while with athletics and the
yes.
team makers and this NIL thing. I think people underestimate the generosity of our fan base, though.
Yeah.
Like, if there's just another, I think, and Jay's doing a good job now of coming out and informing people what the NIL does. I don't know if there's a more direct, impactful way to put your touch on NDSU athletics and the NIL collective right now.
Not right now.
And what the, I don't know. It's like I said, it's now, I think people underestimate, it doesn't have to be a giant, you know, financial burden that you have to count on giving to every year either. Like if somebody comes in and, like I said, this is all a means conversation. If you're gonna, if you have something to give, but I think $500 once a year goes a long way. Just getting people into and buying into the support. It doesn't have to be, you personally listening right now don't have to go fund the Gray's Able check if it comes to it.
And dude, I'll tell you this, and people might not think this way. Let me just tell you very truthfully, if you don't think that you pledging $50 a month to the NIL collective makes a difference, I promise you it does.
Yeah.
I promise you. Whether it's, you know, as we mentioned on Twitter, all 14 men's and women's programs are involved. If there's 10 of you, if there's 10 of you giving $50 a month, that's $500 a month. That's $6,000 more that goes in the kitty, and it all helps. And yes, somebody, some bigwig or some business is probably going to write an annual check for $100,000, and that's going to be awesome too.
Yeah.
But you can be a part of the rest of it. And as we mentioned, you talk about the actual product on the field, wins and losses, players leaving, players staying. And I get it, man. You can be as against it. Like, I'm not, right? I think I have issues with some of the way that the portal is utilized and some of the rules. But the portal has just given athletes the exact same freedoms that coaches have had forever.
Correct.
Okay. I'm not anti-portal. I'm anti some of the ways that the portal's been weaponized and some of the, I don't know that they quite understood the beast that they were unleashing when they made it this easy.
Right.
And there are kids, by the way, that enter the portal that just don't ever play their sport again. And it's sad as hell. And that's the ugly side of it. Same thing with NIL. I'm sorry. In some of these cases, and folks, it's a capitalist market. If it wasn't worth it for whatever reason for these companies to use these NIL opportunities, if it wasn't worth it for State Farm to have Caitlin Clark from Iowa, they wouldn't do it.
There's an equitable market value for these companies to use these kids. It's no different than – it's just on a smaller scale as professional athletes. They've been the number one piece of marketing material that companies have used forever.
100%.
And now these kids are just able to – monetize their ability while they're at the peak of it in the 5 years they spend in Fargo.
And you can we'll move on, but you can think that NIL is evil and that it's causing a huge problem within the game and all these things, and that's fine. You know, but it is not going anywhere.
That's a thing.
And if NDSU had stayed, or the people around NDSU had stayed not having a collective and counting on, I don't know, guys to, like, I don't even know how Comfort King and Cam, I keep getting, it's always an example, but I truthfully don't know. How did Comfort King and Cam come together? Did someone talk to Colleen? Did someone reach out to Matt? I don't know, because there's not an NIL agent in Fargo. You know, so without somebody out there advocating and without this collective, you can hate NIL and think it's the devil and think that the honor of amateurism and all that, you know, should have been kept in college sports. That's fine. That's a valid opinion, but if you maintain that opinion now and close your eyes and pretend it's not happening,
right?
Gray's gone, Cole's gone.
Yeah,
it's keep going. You know what I mean?
It's a game you have to play if you want to compete in college athletics right now.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, let's talk to you about some Big Deck Barbecue, man. You got to have Bismarck went well.
Yeah, Bismarck was great.
Okay,
had a few people come up to me, stop dead in their tracks, like, "You're the Benchwarmers guy."
There you
and
go.
I'm like, "Yeah, you're right. I am. I'm one of the Benchwarmers guys." So very appreciative. There are Bison Report listeners out there, and it was very cool to see you guys.
Love that.
But, yeah, it was great. I mean,
can we get a Benchwarmers? I'm sorry.
Yeah, working on that. Yeah, so we're doing Christmas boxes right now. That's our big push.
Love that.
$40 for products that you pick in it. Personalized gift package. It's in gift packaging, ready to go under the tree. I'm sure you're one of these guys. I am one of these guys. When you're asked what you want for Christmas, you say, "I don't know," or "I don't want anything." Because truthfully, I do just buy my buy myself the stuff I want. But obviously, you get stuck with somebody for gift giving around Christmas, around the holidays. This is a great option because everybody uses barbecue sauce. So $40, we'll ship it right to your door. You'll have it by Christmas. Those are available at BigDykeBBQ.com.
All right, love that. And now what we are going to do right here, Mr. Willis, is you're going to kind of chill because we're going to get NDSU men's basketball analyst, Mr. Nate Zastro on the horn, because our old pal Tim Miles is going to put his San Jose Spartans on the floor against the Thundering Herd tonight. All right, we're going to welcome on Nate Zastro, our lead men's basketball analyst here at Buy's Report. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
Well, got to head to a Packer game last night and watch a victory on Sunday Night Football. Looking forward to some Bison hoops tonight. So it should be a fun one with Miles coming back to town.
Yeah, speaking of Bison, did Christian get either one of those in your end zone? It looked like he had end zone seats.
They were one of the first one was in my end zone, yes. The second one was a very good view of him just going up and snatching one in the air with a great throw by Love. So, yeah, the crossing route was in our end zone.
All right, and that was Packers Today as part of the Bison Report Radio podcast. Okay, Tim Miles, impact on the NDSU program. Timmy's bringing his San Jose Spartans into town tonight. It's Jersey night at the Shack, and it should just be fun. I'm going to try and get my whole family there. First time, I do believe, having a Mountain West opponent in the Shack, at least. And just a really high-level mid-major game. Very excited for it. Just could not possibly encourage folks more, especially after the excitement of Saturday's football playoff win. Like, let's keep it going. Let's have a good Monday night this evening. But let's go back in the time machine a little bit. We didn't get a ton of a chance to speak on it just because, you know, we were kind of cranking through both the Grand Canyon and San Jose State updates there. Can you just talk about kind of Tim's impact on the program? And obviously, you know, it's they've literally in Division One never had anybody but his coaching tree. I mean, Tim passed it on to Saul, which passed it on to Dave. Like, the Tim Miles staff is the only thing NDSU's known for 20 years of Division One basketball.
Yeah, and I think Miles was kind of, I mean, he transitioned them through the Division One program or to the Division One transition with inside class and having all those kids redshirt. I mean, he was the guy that kind of brought them through. And like you said, though, his coaching tree, I mean, you can see old pictures when he was a head coach. You got young Saul, young Dave. You think you got young Kemp in there even. And then obviously came, I think, once Saul became head coach. But, yeah, he's had a huge impact. I think he was the big key to the transition going well with that first class and first year becoming Division One and going to the NCAA tournament. I think that kind of set up you for success with their basketball program earlier than most at the Division I level.
All right, and I think this is, you know, maybe a better question for Coach, but he said not here. But just your kind of your understanding, you know, being part of that family for 4 or 5 years. What was kind of the impact that you felt like Tim and even Saul, who's not a part of what's going on tonight, but that Tim and Saul had on NDSU's program?
Yeah, I think they both obviously brought him through it. And Tim didn't recruit me as much. Saul was a lot of my recruiting. And I think they set the culture. Dave obviously has been there for a very long time. I think he came up as a GA.
And I'm sorry, their impact on Dave. I already said the program thing. I'm sorry. My mind's wandering.
Yeah, you're all right. I think Dave came up as a GA, and I think guys like Miles, guys like Saul, he got to see somewhat different coaching styles, recruiting styles, and Dave kind of has his own way. But I think the big thing that they set was the culture. And Tim had a culture with where he was going to find kids that are going to motivated and going to be able to develop into good players. And that's kind of how Saul did it, and that's how Dave's doing it now.
Just lost to these guys a week ago, but had a significant lead in that game, had a significant lead in the Grand Canyon game, kind of honestly carbon copies of each other. I went over that a little bit last week, but what did you see in that loss, and why does NDSU maybe have a little bit more hope tonight other than, you know, just the home field or home court advantage of it all?
Yeah, I mean, current players, obviously, I'm sure they're going to know that Tim Miles used to coach here, but they probably don't have much in it besides that Dave's probably happy to welcome Tim back. I think last week they were up in both games. I think the Grand Canyon game, they were up the majority of that game until about, I think, like 15 minutes left. And Grand Canyon kind of started putting a run on them and pulled away. San Jose State's a good team, and Tim's brought in some players that are kind of win-now type players, where he's make a little bit looking to get some wins and maybe get on to a bigger job again. I think we'll be talking about that here in a little bit, but they're a very good team, and San Jose State used to be a bottom feeder in the Mountain West, and I think Miles got them to about 18 wins last year, so it'll be a tough test. I think I saw NDSU's slightly favored. My ESPN app showing 2.5. So it should be a very good game, and hopefully the crowd can come in probably to see an old friend in Miles and hopefully get a Bison victory tonight.
Yeah, certainly one of the bigger – I mean, one of the bigger games in the Shack as far as a non-conference quality of opponent. Like you said, San Jose State, a good brand, and frankly now, you know, very much a middle-tier Mountain West crew. Timmy's done a good job there. They're pretty long and athletic. I mean, I think people remember that San Diego State team that NDSU lost to in the NCAA tournament in 13-14. Just sure seems like they have kind of that length and that athleticism that, you know, we have always thought of with the Mountain West, just with that San Diego State team being so key on Bison fans' mind.
Yeah, and they do have some length, and they're players averaging between 12 and 13 a game, so they don't really have a star, I would say. But like you said, they use their length and athleticism. Miles has always been kind of a defensive type guy, and that's the type of team that you need to win in that Mountain West. You can remember San Diego State, those teams were always long and athletic. New Mexico used to have teams that were long and athletic. I think it's just the style of the league, and that's kind of what Tim's brought to San Jose State, and that's why they've started to win a little bit. NDSU's going to have to take care of the ball and probably shots from the perimeter and hopefully get it rolling early.
A kind of older sort of international crew, they basically said on the San Jose State broadcast feed that I watched when they played out there, like the portal didn't kind of go the way Tim wanted, so he went international. I wonder, and I'm not trying to say this to be mean to San Jose State. I'm not, because I understand that, you know, Dave's been here a long time, but we've had coaches leave at NDSU before for more money and you know, bigger opportunities, et cetera. I get that for sure. But I do wonder with this group of sort of what seems like hired guns, you wonder if Miles doesn't have one more run in the sun kind of in his brain, one more Power Six run kind of in his mind, if he can have a 20-win season here at San Jose State.
Yeah, I think that's definitely on his mind. Is that going to be like a high major job? I don't know. I think Tim still wants to take the right job. And if you go to a program now with the transfer portal and NIL, you need to have a school that's going to have some boosters and some budget to be able to do that. What that's like at San Diego, at San Jose State, I'm sure it's a tier up, kind of paid like a MAC job right now. So I guess the next move up probably is a power five job, and I don't know if 20 wins gets him that again. He's obviously got the reputation of taking Nebraska to one of their, I think it was their first NCAA tournament when he was there. Obviously got the can eventually, but I think that program made some strides with him there, and he's obviously got that on his resume going forward.
Yeah, I liked him. I'd give him one more shot. Okay, what has to go well tonight for NDSU to get a victory? You know, you have the rare situation in which, you know, they played this team a week ago and haven't played a game since. So what did you see in that game, and what do you think has to go well for NDSU? And keep in mind, we don't know the status of Tajavis Miller. Javis did sit out the San Jose State game with an ankle injury a week ago.
Yeah, I think the week of practice probably wasn't all preparing for San Jose State. I think it was a lot of fixing some things within themselves. Like I said a little bit earlier, they've had leads in these last two games and ended up losing by double digits. So I think just staying the course the whole game and continuing to play well and learning from your mistakes from the last time. I think I was trying to look this up. They were up and down 5 at half and lost by 13. They haven't shot necessarily well under 40%. They probably got to shoot at least up to 45. Try to hit between 8 and 10 threes, I think would go a long way. I don't think San Jose State's a super high scoring team. Obviously the health of Tejavis would be nice to have his length on defense as well. But I think they've got to play a little better offensively. 65 points is tough to win, especially on the road, and hopefully getting back on the home court will help that.
All right, Nate, give me a prediction for tonight and we'll let you go.
Let's go Bison with some free throws late and win by 4.
All right, love that. Thanks, buddy. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks. Go Bison.
This episode of the Bison Report Radio podcast is brought to you by the good folks at Gateway Chevrolet. Folks, four-wheel drive season is coming, and even though we have had a mild winter, I got to tell you, it is on the way in one way or another. Even if we don't get feet and feet of snow, you still never know when you're going to get that dreaded wintry mix. The roads get slick. You're going to want all-wheel drive. You're going to want four-wheel drive, and they have a phenomenal selection of new and used vehicles, a number of all-wheel drive Cadillacs, and a number of four-wheel drive Chevrolet and all-wheel drive Chevrolet options. Check them out at gatewayfargo.com or just stop in and visit on the I-20 Ryan Frontage Road in Fargo. Zach, there was a game. You're back.
Yeah.
Little stretch, little yawn for my boy. We might have lost him for a second there after. Was that a taco nap?
Yeah. It was a long weekend, long drive, and then
they put my boys up on the screen here.
I eat a dozen tacos. I'm fighting for my life over here.
Okay. One thing that I will say, and I don't want to always get up on my high horse, but I saw some stuff on Bobcat Twitter because we were sort of trying to, because here's I'm a sicko, right? And so for me, the stuff that I wanted to see that I didn't get a chance to see or that the ESPN crew didn't do a great job of was like, and not because I hate the Bobcats. I have no, in fact, I kind of like of the elite FCS fan bases, I think Montana fans are way more annoying. And South Dakota State fans are obviously a breed all of their own after getting punched down on by the Bison for 15 years.
Yeah.
Like Montana State fans are pretty high on my hierarchy of decent people to deal with.
I think they know ball too, which makes them a decent crew to deal
with.
Right.
Yeah. I actually agree. So what I was kind of looking for was like the guy who just buried his head in the giant foam cowboy hat was like the only fan reaction. I cannot even imagine what my face would look like if my favorite team's season ended on a blocked extra point at home.
I would find the camera operator and make sure he did not see me.
Like people had to be in absolute shambles and we just didn't get that. Like I said, we saw the one reaction shot and I get it, man. Like NDSU was storming the field. I think it's very cool and totally fine, et cetera, that they did more of like, how are the Bison coming off the sideline? How are they reacting? Did they get a shot of Ents? Did, you know, whatever. Like yeah. That all stuff is fine. But you had like the ultimate surrender cobra. My hands are now over my head.
The Kansas State kid.
Yes.
The Michigan guy.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, to kind of seek out more of like their reaction, because I was thinking to myself, like, again, my God, what would I think if that happened to North Dakota State? Or what would I think if that is how a Packers season ended? Or, you know, how would I react? And I saw some stuff about coaching.
Yeah.
And I get it. Like anytime you lose the end of the season, you know, Bison fans, God love them, you guys can't make it through a half of being down without asking for someone to get fired, right? Usually Tyler.
It's just aimless blaming. You're just angry. You don't know what to blame, so yeah. Blame the coaches.
And I'll say this, Montana State was so well coached, man.
Yeah.
They really were. Their offensive game plan, the way that they attacked what NDSU likes to do defensively, and we'll get into some of the issues that I have with sort of our game plan or NDSU's game plan there. And then defensively, corner blitzes. I know that was kind of, if you go back in time, and I was in college, you were a youngin yet. I think they're two touchdown underdogs, but the Miami Dolphins went in and just cracked Tom Brady and the Patriots with basically a single wing. I mean, they played Wildcat. Like they snapped the ball to Ronnie Brown, and Bill just had no idea.
Right.
Just did not, you know, didn't understand what to do. And eventually teams started blitzing a corner or blitzing a nickel, because that, when your quarterback is lining up as a wide receiver and he's not a threat, your numbers are down. And when you're snapping the ball to a guy instead of handing it to him, your numbers are down. To get your numbers back to level, those extra pressures, and you saw some of that with what Montana State was doing in the right times. And it's not like they had every dude in the box. There were plenty of, like, maybe not total split safety looks, but like overhang safety looks. Mm-hmm. And they were very, very well coached on defense, and it took a hell of a effort from the Bison to get to 35.
Yeah, and that's why games like, because Vegan obviously is so familiar with the program. Like,
right.
There's things that have lasted forever in NDSU football that are just staples and mainstays of what we do, like philosophically as a football team. And of course Vegan knows those, and that's why these games are so much fun, because it just comes down to breaks in the game and talent versus talent.
Yeah.
And that is why, like, and again, you're calling for the guy to be fired, but T-Roll is going against basically cooked books and still putting 35 up in a playoff game.
Yeah. I know. So that one of the talking points I think that's valid is to talk about Cam.
Mm-hmm.
Finished 11th in the Walter Payton. Get new voters.
That's crazy.
Just get new voters. It's the system is so broken from a standpoint of people that, as you just said, no ball.
Yeah.
There are no ball knowers voting on that stuff. If you think Cam Miller is the 11th best player in this country, like, I just can't help you.
Even if you don't know ball that well, but you watch the football games, I can deal with that because there's so much context out of a box score. And it's, I don't know, the Heisman's going to be interesting for the same reason too, but who's going to get the vote? Is it just the quarterback for the best team in the country? Because that's kind of how people just vote for stuff. So
sort of looks like it. When I heard that Gronowski was a finalist, it's like he wasn't even the best quarterback in his conference.
And that's not a shot at Gronowski either.
No, like, it's not.
He's an incredible football player, but I just – and look, there – I have bias on a different level because I played with Cam and watched what he went through as a true freshman coming in the spring and like where he's at now. And he's a completely different football player. And I got made fun of for my Drake tweets too, but like he's doing stuff that it wouldn't matter who he was playing.
Yeah.
The technique and how he's placing balls that put him in an upper echelon of FCS football players.
It is too bad that his best throw of the day and maybe NDSU's best play of the day didn't count because of that hold on Gray. But you know, we've gone through and certainly talked about the fact that he was Pro Football Focus College's number one overall offensive player in FCS, number one quarterback, all those things. This was his lowest grade of the season. And I thought that was worth pointing out. You look at the completion percentage, not where you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Even running the ball. And a lot of that again was well played defense, a good game plan, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, their kind of baseline or their C, if you will, is 60, and he graded out at 60.4. So I mean, they basically felt like, as some people might have felt like he played like crap. I mean, they basically felt like he did what you would ask your quarterback to do and no more, and really just kind of was there.
And that's not what we need out of Cam.
No, and right, and I mean, that's fine if that's your worst game. If what you are is like a replacement level quarterback at your worst, mm-hmm. that's great.
Yeah.
But they need him to be more than that for the next potentially three games, and certainly obviously on Saturday against USD, they need him to go back to Super Cam.
Wait, so you're telling me, just to get a point across and clarify, Cam being graded that highly the entire season literally has a metric for people that watch the football game saying he's not a game manager.
Yeah.
He doesn't just run the system well.
Yeah, it's actually people that go through hours of training and football training, and they watch every single snap of every single game. And then that's actually looked at by a second person with the same training.
So it's not just a fan of a rival fan base in the Missouri Valley looking at the box score.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay. Eli Green, man, he's him. I've talked about that. Shout out to Eli.
He's my favorite football player.
Announced today that he was part of the Green and Gold Collective, and that's good because they need to get that kid some money. He is a money player on third down, kind of taking over that Jimmy Capurris role, third and Jimmy.
Yeah.
It's been third and Eli, but he I tell you what, and I talked about this a little bit in the chat, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but if he has another year next year like this year, I tell you, he might be a leaguer. And I, you know, I know Shep, and I thought it was sort of obvious when he was at NDSU, had some athletic limitations, basically, you know, graded out as an average or a below average kind of athlete for the NFL. Obviously, mm-hmm. Shep's a wonderful athlete, but like, you know, when you're 5'10", 5'11", like Eli and Shep are, and you come from the FCS, you better have some other things that you do that are pretty darn special if you're not running a 4.3 flat.
Right.
If you're not verting 37, if you're not, you know, 3L drilling 6.5, right? Like, you better have some other stuff going on, and Eli might. I mean, he is snappy.
Yeah. And that's like, Shep was just a dirty dog. Like, yeah, knew leverages and was so comfortable with Easton that he knew how to find like soft spots and zones that made him so nasty. And he just had that edge too. Like, watching Shep, he played wide receiver like an offensive lineman.
Eli's a bulldog, man.
Eli is the like one of the few guys, like, I think of Jimmy Caporis too, where it's like, this football's in the air, and that football's going to be mine when I come down with it.
Yeah.
And he's, like you said, 5'10", 5'11", a shorter guy going up and getting footballs over taller defenders, and he's blocking. And I think the first offensive play against SCSU, stiff arms the kid and then runs through the kid going into the sideline. And I'm like, this is what has been missing for a while. Like, Eli plays like a dog. And like I said, he's – the league would not surprise me at all, because I think he will test well. If,
yeah,
when it does come
I mean, that's what it looks like to me. You know, I mean, you definitely and quite obviously played football at a higher level than I do. You kind of always have sort of the football eye to it, or like the player's eye. And I'm always thinking of it as a scout, or as, you know, somebody who's been paid to evaluate prospects. And I look at Eli and I say, that's more snap than Shep had.
Yeah.
And there's Eli, by the way, is not as good a player as Shep yet, mm-hmm. you know, but. With that said, I mean, the ceiling, the upside, what I see from a movement type, like, he's got more wiggle and more snap is the word we keep using than I thought Darius had, and has just been an unbelievable asset to this team, really, last year's playoffs and then this whole season.
Yeah,
he's just been that guy.
He's just a dude, too, that, like, if he catches a ball in the flat, he's going to turn around and he might be gone.
Yeah.
And it's been, I think of like Ryan Smith, that kind of movement ability of like, hey, I have this, and there's nobody on the field that can touch me on my way to the end zone. And that's why another year with Eli is very exciting to me. And that's why I'm glad he's in the Green and Gold Collective.
Yes. I thought some of the stuff that they did, I think they stuffed Rajah right away, like early in the game, but not giving up on that. And I just liked the design of the run. And I know that it's not that unique, but a couple of the two times it really worked, and I'm going to do more of, I'm going to hopefully have time here. I'm going to try to make the time really to have a more traditional week where we get behind the numbers, we get the film review, we're going to do all that stuff on the Montana game. And two plays that I'm going to have highlighted, Zach, I loved when they just let the end go, the D end,
mm-hmm.
and the tackle just immediately climbed to backer. And I mean, it was, you saw the two plays that I sent to the chat.
Yeah.
It was immediate, and the backer got eaten up. Jalen got one and Gray got the other.
Yeah.
And in between, I think it was Peyton both times, and the defensive end is just like, I'm lost. I am absolutely stuck, 10 cleats in the ground, flat-footed, can't move. Do I go with Cole or do I go with Rajah? Both times it was Rajah, and it was like a flag football 20-yarder.
Yeah, make their good players have to make tough decisions. That's a great way to leverage them against themselves and how they're going to defend it. Because if we can go and block the guy, that's probably going to make the tackle on the second level and let that first guy – it's not anything new in football philosophy, but there's some teams that
no, people have run read option before.
Yeah, to guys like Micah Parsons, where they're literally like, we can only slow him down if he has to think, so make him have to think. And I love the combination of either of the quarterbacks with Rajah back there, and I think Rajah's really found his niche in the offense, and it's been fun to watch.
Speaking of the defensive ends, I'm going to give flowers to Tommy because he deserves them.
Yeah.
I need to give flowers to Greeby 10. We pointed him out in the preview show. That dude's a dog.
Dog.
Like, you don't see guys get after Jalen and Gray that way.
Yeah.
Just a dude.
Heavy-handed.
Yeah, he is. He's something else. Okay. Defensively, and we might have cut. There might be some editing. I had an issue. We had the Bluetooth hooked up so we could talk to Nate and my phone started acting a fool. That was the technical difficulty there. This is going to sound braggy. No one cares. I'm not bragging. It's unimportant. My bones, or my like serious social media bones, were made in the Packers sphere, right? So I have a little shade over 18,000 followers on Twitter. Again, no one cares, but that's like, I have 18,000 followers. I would guess 15,000 of them are Packers fans. Sure. Okay. So when I am online, if you will, as me, as Ross, I am more often than not Packers. Okay. I'll say some NDSU stuff or whatever, and then usually retweet it from the Bison Report thing. But when I'm providing commentary on Bison Report, it is usually from the Bison Report handle. And I still try to go more third person and make it feel like an organization and like it's not just first person talk, but I'm very, I wouldn't be as sharp or as pointed in criticism, certainly from the Bison Report account, as I would personally.
Right.
And even then, I felt like some frustration feeding onto the Bison Report feed because of the defensive game plan and some way that things were done. And it really was exactly what we were talking about, Montana State being coached well, that I thought NDSU gave up some opportunities, especially in some like money downs, where when you have a non-mobile quarterback, or even if you kind of have a mobile quarterback, but you are sort of accounting for his play fake. So on a normal, let's use even just like Brock as an example. And Brock was a fine athlete, and they did plenty of design QB run for Brock. But if you have Brock and you're running A-gap power, he's sure carrying out his bootleg fake, but you're not really accounting for him in the run game. You give up a naked boot for 12 yards, you're going to go, gosh darn it, and you're going to go on to the next play.
Right.
You're not accounting for that boot. So your numbers with six or seven in the box can sometimes be good enough.
Mm-hmm.
When your quarterback is 10 or 4, you can't do that.
Right.
You have to account for them. And so when NDSU likes to do, and what I think has been the number one for about the last 5 years, the number one way to beat the Bison on defense is to go 2x2 or 3x1 and get your wide receivers spread out as far as you can. Because NDSU has shown that they will do anything in their power to stay in that cover four or cover two,
yeah,
or two man with two deep safeties and keep everything in front of them. And when you do that and you have four down linemen and one linebacker taking on, let's say it's 2x2, and I saw this formation. Let's say it's 2x2 with a tight end or a sniffer and the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
You have six blockers and a runner against five guys. You're a gap down.
Yeah.
You're a man down.
There's nothing.
And Eli, by the way, yeah. So the play that made me the angriest was that first 4th and 2 that Montana State converted. And they actually ended up missing a field goal, and it ended up not. But they brought in Chambers. Chambers is 10, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Chambers him a lot. They brought in Chambers, spread NDSU out. I think they had a sniffer between the tackle and the guard. And Eli eats a double team.
Yep.
I mean, buries two guys. And it just didn't matter because they just didn't.
You're still down.
You're still down, dudes. And it's like, I get it. Don't get beat over the top. And by the way, Tommy actually threw the hell out of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But
I did not expect that.
But you can't. I don't think you could put yourself in a position where you just sort of give up's not the right word, but you're just sort of conceding. I mean, you're asking your D lineman to do a lot, and you're asking your linebackers who, God love them, are mostly 215 to 220,
mm-hmm,
to take on a guard probably,
right,
and jack him up and make the play. And I need to see, and we probably won't see it for the rest of the year. I don't know what Montana does. Bauman's a great player. They ain't running QB power right with Bauman, right? Yeah. So you're not going to necessarily get that with Bauman. I know there's some QB run stuff with Gronowski, but it's not. It doesn't look like Montana State's. It's not literal QB power or QB duo, right, or, you know, some of the Cole Payton stuff. Even I thought was really like a lot of what they do for Chambers is stuff that NDSU does for Payton.
Yeah,
and you might not see it for the rest of the year, but maybe in the future. I maybe need to see a little bit more cover zero, or maybe a little bit more single high stuff. If we can just sneak one more guy into the box and let's play a hat on a hat and not just hope that someone makes like a superstar play.
Well, and we've done it before. You just need like superstar personnel to run that defense.
You need Michael Tutsi screaming in the alley to make that play.
Yeah, like the guy who, and the problem with that is too that, and we saw it sometimes with Tut, if you're relying on him so much, then what is his thoughts is the first time he sees play action to go and defend the pass.
It's O-S word.
Let me turn around and sprint and hope this football slows down. It's just, I don't know. It's the, like you said, I am not as well-versed in the actual X's and O's of defense, so I can't get on here and criticize too much, but it is concerning when I look up there and see five bodies in the box to take on a QB run team, because you are defending all 11 when the quarterback can run the football.
And the basic box score stuff is all sad.
Yeah.
It's all sad. I mean, you have 274 on the ground and 8.1 a rip. And that's bad.
It's a losing combination.
It is. And I'd be interested in Ryan Perrault, if you're listening, and you're probably not, which you have better stuff to do. The last time NDSU gave up more than 8 per carry in a win, I would love to know, because that is just not the standard that Code Green has set. And again, I thought, you know, they missed some tackles in some spots, and at the same time, I thought that there was some schematic stuff that just was not what I would have done. And I can promise you, no one cares what I would have done. But it's just I struggle when you're defending the QB run. If you're not going to – you could do some of that stuff, like I said. You're going to blitz a corner. You're going to blitz a nickel. You're going to add one more guy.
Right.
Okay. I'm about that. If you're just going to play quarters or you're going to play too deep, you're asking to get 8 per carry.
Yeah, and the couple things – it's so weird to see that there hasn't been, like, the kind of transition to game planning for a specific offense that were – because I remember when we would play triple option teams in the playoffs, or teams that had a little bit of a wrinkle on offense, like – I don't know if you remember the monster package that we'd run on defense,
where
it was 4-2, and then Jabril basically playing center field, go make a tackle.
Yeah.
We have the ability to go back in the depths of football history and install any defense we'd want to, and that just seemed like an odd choice to take on an offense that is geared the way Montana State is.
Yeah.
And even with the tackling stuff, schematically, you can help guys out that aren't great at open field tackling by not putting them in positions to have a 10-yard by 10-yard box to make a tackle one-on-one.
Right.
And that's what that does when you get that many bodies outside of the box covering outside the hashes.
Okay. But some bright stuff for a team that didn't throw the ball that often, generated 15 quarterback pressures, and they got sacks when it mattered.
Yeah.
And that was big time. I thought Tommy Mellott was so good, and I just my heart breaks for him to get hurt in a way like that. We talked about it. Both, I think, quarterbacks had completion percentages in the very, very low 60s or the high 50s. And I even commented, like, that's not great when people are selling out against the run to the degree that they have to beat Montana State.
Mm-hmm.
For the QBs not to complete balls at a high clip is not great, because in my head, you're kind of thrown into some pretty big windows, would be my guess.
Right.
And that's just not what we saw. Touchdown Tommy lit them up. I mean, he was that ball was where it needed to be, time in, time out, for a guy that, you know, again, the reputation is running quarterback, not a throwing quarterback. And I didn't see that last night. I mean, I know I've watched the tape. I've looked at the numbers. Like, I've watched plenty of Tommy Mellott. Saturday's Tommy Mellott was on a different level, and again, heart just breaks for him.
Yeah, it sucks, and it was already an instant classic of a game, and we haven't even talked about the most exciting part of it yet. But, like, just you want to be in rock fights with their best players, and at least as a viewing fan, as a player, you're never happy somebody's injured, but you're like, okay, well, now we don't have to deal with that, like – Tommy would have been a real problem for the rest of the game if he was healthy the entire time. But just him personally, I hope he gets better and bounces back. That sucks.
Hunter Ponches.
Ponch. My king. The bench warmer king.
You know, one of those guys, Cordell was one of those guys. I didn't even argue Mason Miller, one of those guys. You've kind of mentioned, like, oftentimes, and it really is, unless you're an interior guy, and specifically maybe even a center, because we've seen some young centers do well, and they've got one right now that they think a lot of in mm-hmm. Jack Lewinsky. But the tackle bodies have always been these like 258-pound, 6'7" dudes that play basketball in high school, have great feet, and then it's, you know, into the development factory. And I think that development factory has slowed a little bit, or maybe just isn't quite where it was at, from constantly churning out pro tackles, although maybe Gray and Jalen just kind of continue on down the line, and,
sure.
And we have no idea what the hell we're talking about. But Rock and Pontius, Jake Rock and Hunter Pontius, were those long body types, and could it be the guys in front of them just refusing to graduate? Yeah, it could be, but I think there's also a world in which Gray Zabel stays inside if Pontius or Rock are mm-hmm. all-stars or whatever, and you know, you can play Gray at a guard or play Gray at center, or, you know, kind of do whatever you want. I would say even the extra offensive line stuff has not been super heavy this year because, again, Rock and Pontius just haven't kind of taken whatever step that kind of is. Matt Entz talked about it in his post-game press conference. They called it the Viking package because he's a Twin Cities kid, played hockey. And I just, for them, and they do this in the national championship game a lot, and I've heard that even Jerry Rosberg, who is just this special teams genius,
because mm-hmm.
There's such a long gap in between the semis, would pour over special teams tape on behalf of the Bison, and they would come up with this or that, and you've seen different high impact special teams plays in national championship games, 100%. And if you get this look, you know you're going to score, stuff like that. But even beyond just the national championship games and in general, always just the way, even I've got a personal relationship with Ben LeCompte. He's friends with a lot of our friends, and just talking to him about how much they truly do treat it as a third of the game. You know, there are practice periods that are designated to special teams, more than you would think.
Yeah, and that's not common around the country.
Right, and for them to have that consistent special teams advantage, and it won them the game. I mean, yes, it literally won them the game, but Montana State missed two other kicks. Yep. I mean, this was a big special team swing in NDSU's favor, but, I mean, that had to make your heart sing. Yeah. To see a guy who I'm sure, like, he probably in his mind on signing day 4 years ago was like, I'm going to put in a year in the weight room, and then, you know, Cordell's going to graduate, and I'm going to be the right tackle for 3 years, and I'm going to be at all conference, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And it just hadn't gone that way.
Yeah, fighting through all the stuff that all of the guys who didn't play a ton of career snaps have gone through. It's never easy mentally to go through that work Monday through Friday and not be rewarded or given the burn on Saturday that the rest of the guys are.
Yeah.
It's a lot to ask of kids to go through NDSU's development program for as long as he has for, you know, maybe an opportunity to get in on field goal block on a Saturday in a playoff game. And then he just sticks that big meat paw up there. And
I was going to say, brother, the diehards, the folks that listen to this show, that read our stuff, they know probably who Hunter Pontius is.
Yeah.
Don't nobody not know who Hunter is now. Yeah. I mean, that is just, they could, and I don't think they will. This is not a South Dakota preview show. They could go down to Vermillion and just get cracked, and people will be mad, but Hunter's moment will live on.
Absolutely. The Bozeman block is immortalized.
Yeah. Hunter's, I don't care if it's a second round playoff game, it'll live on. I mean, absolutely. that's his stamp on the program. And, again, for a kid that is just not maybe necessarily been rewarded with the snaps on offense that he probably wanted, or that, you know, you mentioned, like, it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
What a reward, man. And just how you just – I love it, man.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's just – it's the little stuff like that play that is giving me this feeling, and I tweeted about it, and it seems like a lot of Bison fans agreed that – it feels like those early dynasty run teams where just stuff started breaking our way and we started taking advantage of it. Whereas in the last few playoffs, it feels like we were fighting against every outside factor in the world to get back to Frisco. It feels like we got some goodwill on our side again, and it couldn't have happened to a better guy. with Ponch. And then, of course, the laces are on his forearm when he comes and it's just like his big goofy self smiling into the camera. It was just all so perfect, and I couldn't be happier for Ponch to leave that impact. Like, that is a game people 10 years from now will be like, you remember when Ponch just blocked that field goal?
Yeah.
Extra point. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
They won the football game because of it.
Yeah. Became public information that Reed Ryan passed away. A guy that, you know, this staff recruited, gave, you know, very honestly, Hunter Pontius like years to the Bison. Not necessarily getting rewarded on Saturday, but showing up in that D-line meeting room, showing up at practice, scout team, whatever it needed to be.
Yeah.
And I think anytime somebody passes, you say nice things about them. Anytime someone young passes, it affects people. But you could see when they asked Matt about it after the game how much it affected him, and how much, even though on the roster he's a UMD Bulldog, there is something to once a Bison, always a Bison, and everyone on this team had their lives touched by Reed in one way or the other. The one thing, and you know, I am a religious person, but like the one thing I can't get out of my head, and Westberg is the one that put it on Twitter.
Yeah.
When they blocked the field goal, whatever angle on that side of the stadium and wherever the sun was, it looked like the sun was only shining on NDSU's guys, like right down the line of scrimmage, and the sun was shining on the guys who blocked the extra point. And Westberg said something about it, and it was just like, okay, I'm going to cry now.
Yeah, it gives you goosebumps, man.
It does. And, you know, I said my piece about Reed. I'm sure you have yours, but cool to play for something bigger than football. And it's so clear that this is an important thing to these guys.
Yeah, I mean, words can never do justice, obviously, losing somebody in the program. I mean, it truly is a brotherhood, and we lost one of our own way too soon. And Reed was special, man, just because he, when it all sucked, he was just wired different than everybody else. He was a wrestler. He was always smiling no matter how bad it sucked, and cracking jokes, and it's an incredible light lost. But like you said, man, it just feels like there's something outside of us that are guiding us along this path. And make me sit here and cry and do the conversation, but like, it's to give those guys, they're playing for Reed right now, outside of themselves. It's super special.
And I think about the family. As a dad, it's hard to think about not going before your son.
Of course.
I think that's pretty terrible for everyone. Okay, on to lighter fare. Just kind of the meaning of this game in the grand scheme of things. You know, we had, and we'll wrap it up here. This is another beefy edition. That's okay. This is a big game, and a big game tonight at the Shack, and it's good to just talk some NDSU stuff. So, but I think, you know, we went on and on about the seeding discussion, right? And we're the best 8 teams seeded. I think now it's pretty clear. No, although the only, and surprise, surprise, which is the only seeded team not left standing, it's the poor bastards that ended up, with NDSU in their pod. But I think for me to call this season a success, they probably need to win on Saturday.
Yeah.
They go out to Montana, get beaten a close one.
It's a semifinal run.
Yeah, you know, with everything that's gone on and you know, some of the guys that hit the portal last year and some of the adjustments that they've had to make, you know, losing a guy like Will Mostert. And look, teams, everybody loses guys. I understand that. But everything that's gone on, you know, you're one of the last 4 of 127 or 131 or however many it is. I think you got to be pretty happy with that. But just to not lose that game was almost as fun as winning, if that makes any sense. Like, to just prove, like, yeah, we're still them. Like, people thought Montana State was the second best team in the country. We went into their gym and beat them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, at some point, the Valley and North Dakota State deserved a 6, a 7, or an 8 seeds worth of respect.
Yeah, I think that's fairly clear now. And we've been begging that table that whatever, you can call it homerism.
Yeah.
But until it's not a predominantly dominated by Missouri Valley, you know, playoff situation, Frisco situation, I just need to be proven otherwise that these teams are worthy of being taken seriously outside of the top five. And there's the Bison just outlasted, and like it's just the never say die thing that you're seeing. Like, we're blocking extra points in overtime to win. Yeah. Like, when does the rest of the field start to get nervous and like, oh, the Bison are back, man?
I mean, I tell you what, I would guess that anybody that's not a Rabbit fan right now is probably pretty darn nervous. All right, thanks to Zach Willis for coming in and giving us some of his time. Thanks to Big Deck Barbecue and our sponsors at Gateway Chevrolet. And thank all you wonderful people for listening to this show. Have a great week, everybody, and go Bison.